I know I didn't give you much, 2.5 sacks. Still a lot of money from you, but I appreciate it. Hey, I'm just being honest, all right? We talked about this last night at Jerry's party. Redskin owner at the Cowboys party. Me feeling awkward because I stole so much money from Dan, but he was very gracious. And Dan Snyder, thank you so much for what you did for me and my family and for the opportunities.
Very rarely will you hear a professional athlete say they were overpaid, thus ripping off their employer based on their performance. Courtesy of ESPN, that is exactly what we just heard Jason Taylor do during his 32-minute Hall of Fame induction speech yesterday. I don't know. That was pretty damn cool, I thought. Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, and we are here every Sunday from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, the official home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We are also streaming live on LVSportsNetwork.com. The Twitter handle is Out of Line, 1340 AM. And you can find us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A. L-I-N-E. Joining me in studio, as almost always, my friend and sometimes my foe on the show, the Lotus Broadcasting soccer guru and future Nevada Hall of Fame producer, Magnum, who mans the big board, answers the phone, and is right at home in a Hawaiian shirt at a gentleman's club. But let's face it, without you, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, give me a call, talk to Magnum, turn down your radio, and say what you gotta say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby University. Yesterday was Hall of Fame Saturday, so today we'll hear Brian and Magnum give their thoughts on the Enshrinees and their induction speeches. If you're wondering why Colin Kaepernick still is not employed, you'll get the out-of-line viewpoint. Today's guest is Major League Baseball's last and only surviving 30-game winner, Denny McClain, who won 31 games for the Detroit Tigers in 1968. Plus, you'll hear Who's Blazing, Fact This, and the Las Vegas 51s report. Okay, since Brian likes giving things away, if you call right after What's on Tap, I'll give you a $25 Out-of-Line Bubby University gift certificate. And yes, that includes alcohol. The number to call is 702-876-1340. On Tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff, where the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means we never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. So, Brian, what are the chances of the Lions getting to the playoffs and maybe actually winning a playoff game this year?
Well, hey, Brad, Bubby, it's good to talk to you. And, you know, I have grown up my entire life, as has you, being a Michigander and a Michigan State Spartan like I am. My motto with the Detroit Lions has always been, wait until next year. And here we are at the beginning of this year, and my motto is, wait until next year. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I don't know, Brad, I think that the Lions have a decent shot of getting to the playoffs and winning a playoff game. I think Matthew Stafford is absolutely in his prime. He's stayed healthy for a few years in a row now. I think they've got the receiving core. They're beefed up at running back a bit. They've shored up their defense through the draft and through a little bit through free agency. You know, they're probably going to be, my guess, the second best team in the NFC North again. They'll get a playoff bid through a wild card, and who knows, maybe they'll finally double their win total in my lifetime. I'm pulling for him, brother. But, hey, I got to ask you, what is going on this year? Tell me what's happening about when people come on game days. I don't care if it's college, pro games, to Bubby's University. What kind of things you got going on, my friend?
Well, as always, we are going to show every NFL and every college game all season long. Whenever there's a live game on, we do have our specials going. We just came out with a brand new food menu about a month and a half ago, and Included in that, we have a new football food menu with about 10 items on it. Special items, specially priced. They're all really good. And we will also be having our drink specials. Bud Light and Shock Top will be the featured beers that we're using for the drink specials. And also Thursday and Monday night, we'll be doing giveaways and all kinds of fun stuff like that.
That sounds awesome, man. Well, I'll be out there every night that I can. Mondays are a little tough, but I definitely plan on seeing everyone down there. And like I told you, man, the portions of their food are ridiculous. The tater tot skillets are ridiculous. The quesadilla is ridiculous. And you got to go and check it out yourself. The atmosphere is awesome. And I'm not just blowing smoke up everyone's backside because Brad's my friend and Bubby sponsors my show. Go out there and you'll see what I'm talking about. Brad, always a pleasure, my friend. Getting ready for football.
I'm ready. Can't wait.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you really soon.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. That is Brad. He is the owner of Bubby's University and illustrious sponsor of the Out of Line, and happy to have him on board. Real quick, Mags, yesterday, you know, the induction ceremonies all took place. 7 new members in Canton right now, and all of them, I thought, very deservedly this year. I liked all the members, and as a matter of fact, one of my favorite guys and probably the least known of all of the members was kind of boastful in what you would think was an act of humility. I thought it was a little bit boastful. Let me see what you think. This is Kenny Easley, the first inductee yesterday to speak.
The next 40,000 years, the life expectancy of our individual bus. Folks will look at our bus and start the debate all over again. Who was better, Ronnie Lott or Kenny Easley? So I'm going to settle it now, publicly and for good. In the last 30 years, there has been no better thumper, ball hawking, fiercely competitive, or a smarter defensive back in the NFL than Ronnie Lott. He was the best. There, it's settled, and because I said so.
Now, Mags, I don't know how well you know Kenny Easley and the Ronnie Lott-Kenny Easley rivalry that took place. It was more in my era growing up right out of high school, watching Kenny Easley play at UCLA and Ronnie Lott play at USC, so two rival schools, and it was who was going to be the better pro. It was so funny because I had a big picture. Kenny Easley, they called him the enforcer, and I had a big picture in my first job on the radio in Ishpeming, Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, this giant poster of Kenny Easley saying the enforcer. His arms were the size of my legs. He looked like a dark Greek god. I mean, he just unbelievable. But on the football field, he was devastating. Wicked hits, and you just didn't know who was going to be better. And my friend and I argued all the time. I was on the Kenny Easley bandwagon. My buddy Steve, he loved it because his initials were SF, so he was always next to the Lions. SF was San Francisco, his favorite team. So he was really happy Ronnie Lott got drafted by them. And the argument didn't last very long. I thought early on Ronnie Lott established himself as an absolutely dominating player. I mean, the guy cut off a portion of his finger to play in a playoff game at one time. One of the toughest SOBs that ever put on an NFL uniform. Kenny Easley was solid. Had, I think, 32, 33 career interceptions. Deserving of the Hall of Fame. I was a little bit surprised he got in. But my point is, Max, he said the debate still will continue. And what was it? Act of what he thought was humility sounded to me like boastful, because the truth of the matter is, Max, I know you're very well educated in sports, so this is going to be probably a dumb question to ask you, but how much did you know about Kenny Easley, or do you know about Kenny Easley?
Well, I'll be 100% honest here. I know who he is, and obviously he's a Hall of Fame player, but growing up in the Northeast, when I was younger, Seattle wasn't exactly a great team. And they were in the AFC West, and they were overshadowed a lot by the Broncos and the Raiders, and even the Chargers to some extent. You know, I remember a little bit about him, but clearly I know much, much more and remember Ronnie Lott a lot more, probably because the 49ers were really good at winning Super Bowls when I was a kid. But, and maybe if the Seahawks, because I remember Dave Craig as their quarterback, they had Steve Largent, but they really weren't great. Like they were a bad team when I was.
I think when Kenny first joined the team at that point, Jim Zorn might have still been the quarterback. Yeah, I mean,
and I know there were stretches in the '80s where they were good, but you know, this is in the days before Sunday Ticket and being able to go to a place and watch every game. I was a victim to what was, you know, we'd watch the Jets, you know, depending on who was on the East Coast, who was on the West Coast. I got the Jets, Giants, and Eagles because I grew up right in the middle of Philadelphia and New York. But the West Coast games were usually the Raiders or the 49ers. And so I didn't get to see a lot of the Seattle Seahawks when I was a kid. Obviously today, it's a lot different where kids can...
But you know what? You've definitely made my point. Because here you are. How old are you, Megs?
I'm 38.
Okay. And you barely have heard of Kenny Easley. You know of him. My point is, anyone under the age of probably 38 that isn't a sports fan has no idea who the hell Kenny Easley is. A lot of them were probably watching it. And like I said, out of all of the inductees, out of all seven of them, he is probably the least known, the least recognized. And I'm saying he was a great NFL player, Max, a feared player. You did not want to come across the middle with Kenny Easley playing center field because he was going to knock you into next week. But again, to sit there and say people are comparing you and the debate goes on. The only debaters in that debate are a couple of UCLA diehards that just refuse to accept the fact that Ronnie Lott was a better football player than their UCLA Bruin. That's it. Here I am, a huge Kenny Easley fan. Still to this day, 45, I had a jersey. I had his poster, like I said. And the debate won't even roll off my tongue. It's like, come on, man. Ronnie Lott is one of the best football players to ever play in the league. Kenny Easley is one of the better defensive backs of his day. I mean, my God, like I said, didn't it seem like his attempt at modesty came off as like very boastful, right? Did you get that too?
I didn't take it that way.
I don't think he meant it that way, but he still himself isn't accepting the fact that Ronnie Lott is that much better. It's not even close, brother. It's not even close.
I think because of the fact that these guys play defense, the error, I think, previous to maybe the mid-90s, before there was a sports center and all that type of stuff, where we were getting all the highlights from all the games. I mean, Kenny Easley played before there was an NFL primetime. You know, at least the prime of his career was before that. So it's always hard, I think, with defensive players who weren't on good teams and who weren't in the limelight to really say, like I was surprised when he got in and I talked to some other people who I respect tremendously in this building when it comes to their sports knowledge and they said, hey, he was a really good player.
Max, I'm going to tell you right now, what you need to do is Google Kenny Easley, like plays. Definitely see him at Seattle, but I'll tell you what, watch this kid in college and watch Ronnie Lott in college. And I think you'll see what I saw. There's no way to determine that Ronnie Lott was going to come out that far ahead of Kenny Easley. But Kenny Easley, to his credit, did have some injuries in his career that held him out of games and probably held him back from being what Ronnie Lott is. But again, like I said, not taking anything away from him, I don't think he meant it. I think these guys have so much pride that they don't realize that their modesty can somehow sound like the Eagles running away with them. But did you hear earlier, Mags, real quick, the Jason Taylor, at the beginning of the show, what he said when he talked about Daniel Snyder, and he basically got up there. I know you didn't get to hear him live. You got to Google this as well and check out Jason Taylor's speech, because first of all, I would say 5 out of the 7 speeches at some point brought me to where I was a little bit emotional. I almost needed a frickin' tissue. They were good. They were all good. But Jason Taylor, and one of the parts that was more funny than good was when he talked about his brief stint with the Washington Redskins, and he basically said, apologized to Daniel Snyder for ripping him off, said, I got 2.5 sacks, made a ton of money, thank you for the opportunities, but boy, did I steal from Daniel Snyder. And I've never heard a player come up in a moment like that in such a big stage as a Hall of Fame induction speech and say, Daniel Snyder, sorry I ripped you off. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was cool as hell.
Yeah, and you know, I had completely forgotten that he played for the Redskins. Yeah. You know, it was 1 year. I mean, obviously, as a Jets fan, I remember Jason Taylor's one year.
Ended his career with the Jets.
With the Jets, you know, and it's kind of cool for me because Jason Taylor was a guy that I hated for many years because he was playing for the Dolphins, and even to this day, I hate the Dolphins more than the Patriots, believe it or not. But to think that Jason Taylor and LaDainian Tomlinson both finished their careers for the most part, I mean, other than that one day where they sign and retire as a Dolphin or as a Charger, they essentially finished their careers
with the Jets.
Yeah. And for me, even though I wasn't a Chargers fan, I loved LaDainian Tomlinson at TCU. He was probably my favorite player in the NFL, even though he didn't play for the Jets. And then when the Jets signed him, I was ecstatic. So, you know, his speech really moved me because I felt it really did. It was one of those things where I'm listening to it and I just said, this is absolutely the most amazing speech that I've ever heard, talking about his great-great-grandfather who came over as...
Well, if you see the 30 for 30 on him, they actually... Yeah. He walks around with a guy named Tomlinson, a Caucasian gentleman named Tomlinson, telling him that your great-great-grandfather was a slave owned by my great-great-grandfather. And at first, it was like uncomfortable, Mags.
Yeah.
You got to see the 30-30. It was uncomfortable watching it. And then as you see it, you can see the genuine love of this guy. And he talks about how his father, his grandfather, was the first African-American man to actually purchase land, and his grandfather helped his... It was a good story, and it made LaDainian, by the end of it, LaDainian was crying, and he really had a sense of pride now in his name, and he did extol that in his induction speech, and it was pretty cool. We got to move on. I want to get to more of this because I do want to talk about, if we get a chance later, I got to let you know, Bleacher Report, the top 22 quarter or running backs in NFL. I was astonished at the order they put them in. I hope I get a chance to do that. That came out a couple of days ago. And real quickly, before we go to break, I got to say, Kurt Warner, Mags, if you didn't hear this part of his speech, this was really cool. Something he said he is never revealed until this speech in the postgame show. Nobody knew about. Even one of the members sitting there in the audience who he was talking about had obviously never heard this story before. This is just a quick portion of it. Thanks to ESPN.
I was stocking the cereal aisle, opened up a case of Wheaties, and on the box was one of the men with the seat behind me, Dan Marino. Yeah. Once on the shelves, it seemed that Dan the Man's eyes followed me like one of those creepy paintings in a horror movie as I walked back and forth throughout the night. Every time I looked at the box, Dan seemed to be asking, are you going to spend your life stocking someone else's cereal boxes? Are you going to step out and make sure someone else is stocking yours?
That gave me goosebumps, Mags, because Kurt Warner did get on a cereal box, some Crunch cereal that he was on. But the cool thing was he said there were two defining moments in his life. And he talked about the two. One involved him running out of gas after he got cut by the Green Bay Packers. And he waved to Mariucci saying, you're the guy that cut me and what have you. But and he said the defining moment was he was in the grocery store stocking groceries. And he'd open up a box of Wheaties and he saw the Kurt Warner. He saw the Dan Marino on the box. And as he put it up there, he said it was weird. It was like, you heard the speech. It was Dan, yeah. His eyes are falling like, dude, why are you stocking groceries when you're an NFL capability quarterback? Don't you want your picture on a box instead of your stuff? And he said it changed his life, and he really went out and just was determined to take better care of his family. But it was cool because that was something that he had never, ever shared. It was just something, because he thought it was weird, you know, tell people, God, I'm talking. Because he said he actually had a conversation with the cereal boxes in the store, but he let it out in the speech. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a cool
I love moment. I love Kurt Warner. I dig him to death. I liked all the speeches a lot. I have much more, not that I didn't have admiration for Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is one of those owners that's always bothered me a little bit because he's not my team's owner. If he owned the Detroit Lions, I'd probably love him to death.
Well, yeah, but you would have won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah, the Cowboys, you know, he's like a George Steinbrenner of football. Guys that bugged you, but they bugged you because they were so successful for their franchise and did whatever it took to win. But the admiration I had from came from him talking about his family. And I saw how involved his sons were. And my God, the things he said about his wife and talked about his wife gave him crap when he fired Jimmy Johnson. And I left like, wow, I really like Jerry Jones now. I never thought I would say that.
There's a good chance they probably win a few more Super Bowls if his ego doesn't get in the way and he fires Jimmy Johnson.
They probably, but you know, Jerry Jones talked about it. He always wanted to be a coach. And the story that was great was he was out of the country, and he read that the Dallas Cowboys were for sale. So he picked up the phone, he called, like, and they didn't know who the hell he was. He said, look, if I make it back alive from this fishing trip, I'm buying the Cowboys. And the rest is history. Pretty cool story. Listen, we got to take a break. Denny McClain on the other side, the last guy to win 30 games in the Major League Baseball. Let me tell you something, and we'll talk about with Denny as well. You know it's never going to happen again. Number one, they don't get enough starts. And you're never, with all the specialists and middle relievers, there just wasn't that back in the 60s. And besides this, put this in perspective. Before Denny McClain did it in 1968 with the Detroit Tigers, it hadn't happened since Dizzy Dean did it in 1934 with the St. Louis Cardinals. So, I mean, it is a feat that very few people have done. It was done much earlier in the last century than it was done later on. He's the only surviving 30-game winner. And once Denny McClain leaves this planet, I believe, unless baseball changes its face dramatically, the rules change, they add more games, we're never going to see another 30-game winner. My lifetime, my kids, my grandkids, it just won't happen. You are listening to Out of Line. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.
It's history in the making, but when you get back to the day-to-day, how we go about things, I don't think anyone's really aware of that, and it's what we talked about, you know, a few weeks ago is this is who we are. So this is a team that's going out there expecting to win, plays the right way, and we are finding ways to win games. So we win in different ways. You know, those guys slugged early, we slugged late, and, you know, consistent contributions from all these guys throughout the lineup.
That, of course, manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Dave Roberts, 78-32, 43-7 in their last 50 games. The last time that's been done in a 50-game stretch was in 1912. It's only been bettered once, and that was 45-5 by the 06 or 07 Cubs. I mean, it's ridiculous how good this Dodgers lineup is. And it was, yesterday's game was indicative of how good they are. They're up, they're down 3-0 to the New York Mets, and it's just home run after home run. They just start bashing them out. That's just the way they roll. It starts with Chris Taylor hits his 15th, and a Cody Bellinger, who is absolutely out of his mind. This rookie is going to become one of the faces of baseball, along with Bryce Harper and Mike Trout, the way he's playing. He's at 31 homers as a rookie. L.A., the Dodgers are 19-0 when this kid has a multi-RBI game, and he did again yesterday, 2 RBIs yesterday, including, again, his 31st home run. Yasiel Puig has all of a sudden found his power stroke. He's got at a career high, hit his 21st yesterday. Justin Turner is always good for a home run in the clutch, his 12th yesterday. And another guy, Corey Seager, another part of this Dodgers magic, 19th yesterday. And, of course, the pitching staff, they're still winning at record pace without Clayton Kershaw.
Well, I think the craziest thing of all, they are 68-21 since they called up Bellinger on April 25th.
That's crazy, isn't
they it? They were 10-11.
Yeah, before they called
when they
up
called
Cody,
him
yeah.
up. So, I mean, basically, you could throw out the entire first month of the season because since then they have been absolutely unbelievable. I'm not a Dodger fan, but I like watching this when we can here in Las Vegas because of the archaic blackout rules that we have here. But I've never seen a team with this much power and this much ability to find ways to win games. And their statistics of winning games when leading after like the seventh inning, it's unheard of. I mean, they don't blow leads. Canley Jensen is
yeah, is as good of a closer as there is in baseball now.
But they've even got setup guys in the bullpen, and I mean, I'm not sure if they're going to win the World Series because I certainly think the Cubs are starting to get hot. But it's something to watch right now.
It really is. And I want to bring aboard a guy, if one of my favorite guests. We have him on at least once a year. Still in Detroit. Detroit Tiger. I was really young when Denny was playing, but I do remember I got to go to one game of the 68 World Series. I was 6 years old. I remember the 84 series entirely. But, Denny McClain, I remember from before. Great guy to have on the show. Years of radio in Detroit afterwards. Has had his trials and tribulations in life, as most of us have. Danny, welcome back to the show. And what do you think of this Dodgers team, man? Are they as good as advertised? Is this one of the better teams you've seen in the last decade or so?
First of all, it's unbelievable to have that kind of a spread, 50 games over 500. They still got more than a month and a half to play. They got a good team, no question about it. But, guys, back it up a minute, okay? The pitching sucks. I don't care where you look, how you look, how you analyze it. Take it from the back, the front, the sides. The pitching sucks in baseball right now. We got everybody trying to throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball by everybody. These are major league hitters. Major league hitters hit 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. You hang a curveball, they hit it somewhere. The parks are designed for runs in most cases today. So we're seeing touchdowns scored. We're seeing like the Dodgers have gone crazy. And I'm not saying they don't have a good club. Everybody on that club I like. I mean, I've been a big supporter of Puig for a long time. I think he's going to be a real serious star eventually. And then you got the kid with the Mets. I mean, baseball is really going through a cycle right now of adding a lot of great young players, and that keeps the game alive and vibrant, and that's what we need. But let's not go overboard. With the pitching is awful, just awful.
Well, yeah, I mean, your heyday, you remember the dead ball era, what they called it. And, you know, one of the big issues, transitioning into the Hall of Fame, we just had the NFL's Hall of Fame induction ceremonies yesterday. Like I said, I really thought it was excellent. Probably the best set of seven speeches I've ever seen back to back to back all the way down the line since I've been watching the induction ceremonies. In Major League Baseball, again, I thought some very deserving players in. It was nice to see Pudge voted in, the first catcher, first ballot Hall of Fame in the modern era since, in my opinion, and I think in yours as well, the greatest catcher to ever play the game in Johnny Bench. But I know a guy you're real passionate about, and being a Detroit fan, I am as well. And the dead ball era killed this guy as far as getting into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, that's Bill Freehand. What a hell of a catcher.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Wait a minute. The dead ball era. Listen, the pitching in the 60s, late 50s started in the 60s when the fathers came home from World War II. When the father started working more and more, got closer to their children, we're using the same ball more or less that they used in the 60s. I mean, the ball's not the talent. First of all, we had fewer teams. The talent was deeper on every ball club. The mound was higher until they decided, the commissioner's office and all the rules committee, all these geniuses decided to lower the mound by 6 inches.
Right.
What happened? We all grew up on a 16-inch mound. And why was that good for 75 years and all of a sudden the game is changing dramatically? Everything is cyclical. We know that. But when they lowered the mound 6 inches, I'll just give you a statistic. The top 25 pitchers in 1968-69, 19 of them were gone out of the game by 1974. Gone. You didn't even hear their names mentioned for any reason. So what does that tell you? You lowered the mound, you got guys hurt. I couldn't pitch 2 years later. My rotator cuff was already bad, and lowering it, all it did was cause me less leverage, and a lot of other guys had the same problem. So I don't think anything has changed. We just have more teams, and they got to fill those slots. They got to come up with players somewhere. So where do they go? They have to go to the pitchers, and the pitchers today are the guys that are not consistent enough. They don't leave them in the minor leagues long enough to develop, to know how to pitch. Nobody knows how to pitch in the eighth inning anymore. That's the reason why starters don't go into the eighth and ninth, with few exceptions. So, no, I take real exception when somebody says dead. The ball was dead in the early 1900s and until about 1922, 23. Then, of course, Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs and everybody else started hitting 20, 30, 40 home runs. So that's when the game changed dramatically. But the 60s, man, let me tell you, you had some of the greatest pitchers in the history of the game. Gibson, Marichal, Koufax, all of those guys. And those guys were not pitching with a dead ball.
No question about it. And hey, don't beat me up. They called it the dead ball era. You know that. That's something it was called.
I've never heard it called the dead ball era?
Oh, I've heard it several times in the 60s.
I've heard it called the cycle of the pitcher, where the pitcher had taken over the game for a short period of time. And I didn't believe that either, because if you hang a curveball, they still hit a home run back then. But the talent was deeper because we had fewer teams.
Well, to me, I look at it, and again, I don't remember a great deal about that era. I was young. I remember much more the 72 series, and of course, you weren't there at that time. You'd gone over to Washington, and we got in your place Eddie Brinkman, Aurelio Rodriguez, and Joel Coleman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So they were playing in 72, and that's my real first memory with my grandpa. But my point is, they look it up, you'll see that I'm not making it up. They did call it the dead ball era, because I've heard it. I've been hearing it for a while. But what I would say about it is, I think the issue was, at least when I look back, I was amazed when I look at 68 and that unbelievable Detroit Tigers team. But, you know, I wish I remembered it more, and I've seen highlights. But 68, real quick, what I wanted to say, Denny, is that 68 series, those two teams, the Cardinals and the Tigers, probably one of the greatest series of all times, and it's too bad can't see it. But what I was going to say is the league leader in hitting that year was Kari Skrimski, and he batted 301. So my point is, I think that's why they lowered the mound. I think not that people were disinterested and hadn't been there for so long, is they wanted hitting. It's like that everywhere. Defense wins championship, but fans want to see offense.
I don't disagree with you. Listen, they, you know, somebody made a statement that year after they lowered the mound. They didn't talk to any of us pitchers. We screamed and hollered. It did us no good. We didn't have free agency. We couldn't do what we wanted to do. And so the bottom line is, you're right. With all of those exceptions made, the dead ball era, I've never heard that before. But let me say, you brought up another guy's name, Bill Freehand. Johnny Bench was a great catcher. And there's no way to name the best catcher that ever played the game, because none of us saw the guys that played in the 50s and 40s. And maybe there were some greater ones, maybe, you know, but I don't know how much greater on degree one can be than Bill Freehand or Johnny Bench. Pudge, I just never thought Pudge was a great catcher. I thought he was a very good hitter. But Freehand was the best catcher I ever pitched to. He was the most educated guy when it came to the game. He knew everything at every moment. I was always shocked that he didn't take a manager's job and become a successful guy managing major leaguers, because everybody respected Bill Freehand, and he was a good hitter. He was a good catcher. The best part about Bill is Bill was a teammate, 100% to anybody that played on that team, and he knew what was going on all the time. The managers would go to Bill and say, "Bill, what do you think?" They didn't go to the rest of us. They went to Freehand. He was the brains on the ball club.
I remember, like I said, as a kid growing up, he was one of my heroes. I just loved your Tigers team. I loved Storm and Norman Cash, Dick McAuliffe. Yeah. I mean, I just was a huge, you know, the history of the Tigers is a big thing for me, and that's why I always love having you on the show. You're great at debating with this. And Bill Freehand, again, like you said, 10 all-star teams this guy made.
Yep.
He won 5 gold gloves.
And that's a sin. That's a mortal sin. If you're a Catholic, you know what a mortal sin is.
Yes.
And the bottom line is, it's a mortal sin for baseball not to allow Bill Freehand into the Hall of Fame. Hey, listen, folks, 10 All-Stars, 10 times an All-Star, and he can't get a pimple of a vote. Billy's very ill right now. Billy's got Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I heard. I read about that.
It's just a shame. God, it's terrible.
Yeah, it bums me out to hear that as well. And I just think, you know, looking at all of his statistics, Denny, they are holding that .262 career batting average against him.
Right.
And it's disgusting because of, like you, what you said he did for the game. I remember Bill Freehand, and I believe it was in 72. I watched him get hit by a pitch in the head. And, you guys wore those helmets with no earpieces back then. Bill Freehand was playing the next day. He was back in the lineup. I mean, it was like, oh, my God. It made me, you know, to that day as a kid, I just, you know, I remember my dad coaching, and it was when you got hit, it was a big deal. Do not rub it. Run down to first base, no matter how hard it is. And I remember after seeing Bill Freehand and play the next day, it's like, man, he got hit in the head. I'm not rubbing my arm, you know. And that was the strength and the mindset of a kid watching the toughness of those Detroit Tiger teams. But
I don't know. I know you guys know this, but you probably forgot. You know, he was a tight end or a split end in college for the University of Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan, absolutely.
I mean, he was a tough guy, folks. I mean, that guy was built like a brick, you know what. And there wasn't anything he was afraid of.
No, not at all. And I mean, Jim Price would have probably started for three quarters of the teams in baseball when he's playing behind Freehand. But you're not starting over Bill Freehand. And you know, real quickly, Daddy, one other thing before I let you go. You know, a couple of other people that influenced your life positively and negatively. Well, sure. One person indirectly. At the end of your career, when you moved over to Washington, I know you had your issues with Ted Williams. Now, a lot of people, and you know, I have talked to probably a number of ex-baseball players, and one thing I will say is almost every one of them used the same tone, like when it came to Ted Williams. Look, this guy could hit the hell out of baseball, but he was a real son of a bitch. I mean, that's what everyone says about him that I talked to him that had any recollection or knows Ted Williams.
Yeah, he was tough. I mean, I just got to tell you, he was the toughest guy I ever played for. Ted didn't play the game. Ted didn't understand the game with players. He didn't understand how to direct players. But there's one thing I will always take to my grave. With he and Bob Feller and some of the other guys that played in the major leagues in the 40s and 50s, these guys were also American heroes. They went to war while playing baseball. They left the game to go fly. Ted Williams got in an airplane and defended this country. Bob Feller did the same thing, and others, many others did. So, you know, I've always said, and I told him that to his face 1,000 times, that you're the worst manager I've ever seen. And I said, it's a horrible mortal sin for you to be managing this baseball team. Well, you know, we were horrible, by the way, in Washington. But on the other hand, we didn't practice fundamentals. We never drilled. We never did much of anything because Ted never had to. Ted had more ability. Remember this. And I'm in Cleveland today. Yesterday, they honored my father-in-law, Lou Boudreau. They put up a big statue of Lou, a life more than lifelike, and just a great celebration here in Cleveland. They had 50,000 people
That's
here yesterday.
That's way cool.
And Lou was Ted's manager at one time. And Lou said this. Lou said, he's the greatest baseball hitter I've ever seen in my life. Had he ever learned how to hit the left field with this Boudreau shift, by the way, the original shift was called the Lou Boudreau shift. He said, had he ever learned how to hit the ball the other way, Ted Williams would not have been a career 340, 50, 60, 80 hitter, whatever he was. He would have been a career 450
wow.
or 500 hitter. That's the kind of hitter he was. He saw everything. He hit everything that was a strike. And, you know, he gave everybody a hard time if you disagreed with him. Hell, if I was an umpire, I'd have said anything Ted wanted me to, because that man was the two wars, and he knew how to hit, and that baseball bat in his hand would have convinced me to do anything Ted wanted me to do.
One more name before I let you go, I got to throw up to you. And every year when the Hall of Fame votes and the ballots come up, and, you know, it sickens me because my father is a little boy, and, you know, baseball was my thing as well. I mean, I played football and wrestled in high school and stuff, but, you know, baseball is my sport. I actually lived, Denny, when I grew up. I lived in West Bloomfield, and I lived three streets from Mickey Stanley, and his son Stevie and I played in the same.
You're rich. West Bloomfield.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you know, what can I say? My dad's a doctor, okay? So there you go.
Oh, my God. More money.
There you go. But Stevie Stanley lived in our subdivision. I remember his dad sold cars in the offseason. Sure. And I wondered, why is your dad selling cars? Because he plays for the Tigers. And, you know, as I got older, I realized, man, that you guys were just all born way too soon. That's all there was to it. But, you know,
the whole thing is,
the one guy that at this time of year, that always kills me, because my father always said when I played baseball, he goes, we would turn on the television this week in baseball with Mel Allen, and this guy was always in the highlights, and his name was Pete Rose. And my dad said, on a baseball field, son, that is the guy you need to be like. Watch him play, because his head is continuously in the game. He plays to win. He gets you. He'll steal you an extra run. And as my dad being a coach, watching that, it was like, wow, and I loved him. And to this day, he might not have been the best guy. We know everything that he did. But, you know, like I said, some of these guys that are in the Hall of Fame probably did a lot worse things than Pete Rose did. And the bottom line is,
no question about it.
Yeah. So what's your feeling?
Remember this, and I'll make this quick. When Major League Baseball 10, 12, 14 years ago tested hundreds of players in the major leagues, 106 people tested positive, and we were never told any of those guys. And some of those guys are in the Hall of Fame today. And baseball fell down on their responsibility when it came to disclosing who those people were so the voters could vote the appropriate way. We had people in the Hall of Fame that cheated, that used steroids and other kinds of drugs to play every day. And that's what's wrong with the Hall of Fame today. It just has become a great symbol, It would be great to be a member of it, but the idea that they allowed 106 people to be voted possibly into the Hall of Fame, I think, is just awful. And is Mickey Stanley, what a great player he was. Mickey Stanley, I think Mickey lived north through, well, no, that was before he played. But, boy, I'll tell you, what a player he was. He was the Jim Thorpe of the 60s.
Yeah, before he retired, he played every position on the field at one point in time. Yeah.
He was, I think, an all-state football player, basketball player. I don't know about hockey, but the guy could do anything at any time. And now, well, up until recently, has been a great golfer. I mean, he hits it about 7 miles every time he hits it. And the beautiful part about his golf game, the guy knows where the fairway is. That's, you know, you hit the ball 350, 60 yards in the middle of the fairway. Geez, I don't want to play that guy very often.
Well, his son Stevie is the first kid that ever beamed me in Little League. He hit me in the inside arm, and the kid threw hard. I remember it was like, wow, but I wore it with pride that I got hit by a Tiger's son. But as far as Pete Rose goes, Denny, what I've always said about Pete Rose, and I'll stand by this forever, I say that the bottom line is, if you're not going to take O.J. Simpson out of the National Football League Hall of Fame, then why the hell aren't you putting Pete Rose in Cooperstown?
Hang on. You know, I've got mixed emotions. First of all, there's a sign on the back of every major league clubhouse that says, if you gamble, you're going to be excommunicated, you're going to be shot, electrocuted, whatever the language is. Pete has nothing coming at that point in time. He just doesn't deserve to be there. I mean, number one. Number two, And I'm not going to go into this, but the latest now revelations about this sexual thing is just awful. And I hope to God, I just hope to God that it's not true.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, we all have gotten over the gambling thing. We all have. Yeah. Every one of us except baseball, and they're never going to get over it because if they put Pete in, they got to put all the 1919 White Sox in, or at least the stars that were on the ball.
No doubt about it.
But the bottom line is, if they let Pete in, that's what's going to happen. And Pete, you know, has a tendency, just like some of us do, we kick ourselves in our own ass. And we have to pay for those kicks. And unfortunately, I heard somebody say, well, here we go again. I hope to God that we're not going again, because this would be devastating. I know the Phillies, I think they're going to retire his number. They've now canceled that celebration. Some other things have now been canceled. And now everybody wants to know what the hell happened with all these allegations. And I've known Pete 50 years. I can't hardly imagine that he would be anywhere near what they're accusing of him.
I sure hope. Now, we see Pete a lot here. He's in Vegas all the time. He's in our radio station. We got pictures of him. Yeah. So, yeah, I hope you're correct. I've just always said that the bottom line is they need to define it. Is the Hall of Fame what you did between the lines, or is it what you did as a person? They need to define that, because they're mixed up and they're all over the board with people in the Hall of Fame. Listen, he is Denny McClain, Major League Baseball's last 30-game winner. Like I said, unless modern-day baseball changes completely, we will never see another one in the history of planet Earth. I've said that forever. You're the last one, my friend. And, hey, we always appreciate you coming on the show. Love bantering with you and love arguing with you, brother.
Listen, I love you, brother. You guys take care of yourselves. Listen, you can invite me out, fly me out, put me up at the hotel and what have you. We could really have a good time.
Hey, we'll take a look into doing that. I'm looking at bringing Mike Jones in for the Super Bowl, so maybe we'll bring you here for the next Super Bowl party.
Terrific. I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
You will again, Denny. Appreciate it as always. Thanks, again, Denny McClain. We're long overdue for our last break. We'll come back. We'll get through as much as we can, but hey, that was worth it. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll be right back. All right, that's it. We are out of time. Ran a little bit over. We'll get back to everything next week. I'm Brian Feldman. I want to thank Denny McClain. I want to thank future Hall of Fame producer Magnum. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, the home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We are here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 AM. Don't miss it. Got lots of great things. Next week, we'll get back to Fact This. We'll do Blazing. We'll do the 51s report. Dominic Smith, by the way, PCL Player of the Month again. Get to the 51s game. As a matter of fact, Adrian Gonzalez is playing with Oklahoma City Dodgers, rehabbing at Cashman Field. You got one more chance to see him today. Again, I'm out. Back next week. Same time, same place. We will see you then. Bye.